Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. Welcome to today's proposal for multi-year planning of at-large railroad face-to-face meeting, draft meeting, taking place on Thursday, 21st of April 2016 at 14:30 UTC. Our attendees today are Ellen Greenberg, Olivier Crepin-Leblanc, Cheryl Langdonor, Johnny Benjema, Holly Rage, Maureen Hilliard, Harold Arcos, Daniel Nangasa, Glenn McKnight, Tirana Shwardanyan, Jimmy Schultz, Kylie Khan, Sebastian Bachelet, Alberto Soto, and Steve Annan Tiluxing.
Vande Scalpezi.
Excuse me?
She said Vanda Scartazzini.
Oh, apologies for that. We have apologies from Sean Ojibwe, Wolf Ludwig, Julie Hammer, Umberto Carrasco, Maritza Aguera Minano, Judith Hellerstein, Tim Denton, Wolfa Rahmani, and Adiel Meshad. First up, we have Heidi Ulrich and myself, Yishin Nazar. Finally, I'd like to remind everyone to state their names while speaking for the transcript purposes, and over to you, Ellen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You may wonder why we have called you together today. What we are going to be talking about, as I hope you all know, and I hope you've all read it already, the proposal for multi-year planning of summits and general assemblies. I'll be going over some of the paper, but let me give you the overview of why this is important and why I wish we had had more people at this call. This is arguably one of the more important documents we've ever submitted. We in At Large believe that the General Assemblies and summits are key to maintaining some level of continuity and interest in ICANN among our ALSs. As we are currently funding them right now, things are not necessarily assured from year to year, and there's no real guarantee that the next board, for instance, or the next CEO will have the interest that past ones might have. So although there's no guarantees in life, just because we put it into a plan doesn't mean it's going to definitely happen. I think it's a very important step. ICANN is doing far more planning and I won't use the term budgeting, but detailed planning ahead of time and then working to that plan. And I think it's really important that we get into that process for this type of event. So it's important for our future, essentially. The timeline we're on is very short. This document must be submitted by the end of next week. So it's been a long time coming, but we don't have a lot of time left. It's really important that everyone on this call, and I'll be sending a message out to those who aren't on the call, that everyone review the document and give us comments. And as we go ahead, I'll identify some of the areas where comments are particularly relevant. The one thing that this document is really missing and is going to be a showstopper for in some people's minds is we have very little hard benefits. We have very little that we can document that we have gotten out of having general assemblies or the summits. We know in a small number of cases, we may have a volunteer who became a more adamant volunteer because of the summit or because of a GA. If we can identify people, we're not going to name them in the document, but if we can identify a dozen really good volunteers we have right now, and we have the names even if we don't put them in the document, that came about largely because of these meetings, that would be really useful. If it was 25, it would be better. But anything that we can do in terms of, from your regional perspective, what the real benefit has been other than we had a good party and people got to see a country they might not have seen before, would be really useful in finishing up this document. So, Cheryl, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
what you just said struck a chord with me in two ways. First of all, my immediate reaction to the show-stopping aspect of the hard data, the show us your outcomes in clear, cold, analytical terms, is the same could be said for any ICANN public meeting. Show us any tangible benefit of any of those. But following on from that knee-jerk reaction, and I still think it's a valid reaction, just by the way, and I don't think many people would argue that we shouldn't do public meetings, but, you know, showing the tangible cost-benefit analysis there is probably going to be equally challenging. It also resonated because in today's AP Rallo call, I made the observation that long gone, luckily, but only recently, in terms of the last 2 years or so, are the days of us having a monthly meeting with a half a dozen or less at-large structures represented. And most of those people being the actual leadership team. We now routinely, we certainly would, I don't think ever have anything in less than double figures, but we sit around the 19 or 20. Now that may not be a lot, but it's close to the 50% mark. And I think that's a significant change which may not be easy to tie specifically to the act of having the assemblies, but I personally think anecdotally would be because a number of these at-large structures only started to become engaged in the regional work, for example, let alone the ICANN work, because of gathering and feeling confident and secure in their the value that we place on their opinions through the General Assemblies. So one somewhat glib response and one, I hope, somewhat more useful one. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. Let me be blunt, since this is a call among friends, or I hope. If we can stop that echo, I would appreciate it. Within our community and within the ICANN community, we will find a range of positions. They range from, how dare you ask me for return on investment? This is not a financial, this is not a business, to people who say, if you cannot demonstrate the proof in hard facts, then there isn't any. There are people, including board members, who say, we should have fewer face-to-face meetings for ICANN. We don't really need them. There's nothing we can't do on a teleconference. So when I said hard facts would help, that's exactly the word. It would help. There are some people, including some board members, for whom hard facts will help convince. There are others who do not need them because they inherently understand we're talking about people and communications, and that it's not easy to translate into hard facts. So I was not trying to say that that's the only way we can get this sold. If we have to submit the paper as it is today, I would submit it. You know, minus the typos, hopefully. But anything we can add, whether they are metrics or whether they're anecdotal, of people who have been convinced or ALSs that are more active because they have seen things face-to-face, that would help. It's a help, not a mandatory. So just to be clear. Any other comments before I go dive into it? Okay. The first part is an executive summary. We have deliberately at this point kept it. It's currently a half a page. It must not grow more to more than a page. On the other hand, if there are parts that people believe are either there, which are completely useless and not adding anything to the summary, to giving the overview, please identify them. And if there are things that you think are crucial things we need to bring to the front, then please identify those. There are going to be significant people, including presumably a fair number of board members who only read the executive summary. Let's work on that assumption, make sure that it captures what we want to capture. As I said, right now it is pretty bare bones, but it does try to capture the whole bit, little bit of history of why we're doing it and what we want to come out of this process. I'm not keeping an eye on the hands. If anyone has one up, and I see Olivier does now, please someone call out and let me know there's a hand up. Olivier, yours.
Thanks very much, Alan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And I wondered whether staff should not put the document on the screen, or was there a reason for keeping the agenda on the screen?
There was no reason in my mind. I hadn't looked at the screen. Now it's there, except we're at the end instead of the beginning. I see everyone has their own scroll. All right. I'm not going to say a lot more about it. I'm presuming every board member will read the executive summary. I'm assuming everyone here will also. So look for things that are really extraneous and could be chopped out, and look for things that are missing. The document, I believe, has been distributed just in PDF form. I will distribute a copy, or staff will. I don't remember who has it right now. In doc form, if you only have a small number of comments, it's a lot easier to process them if you simply identify the line numbers and say what you want to change. But if you want to work on the whole document, then we will work from that as well. Please do not recreate a doc file from the PDF. That causes all sorts of problems when trying to merge them together. Holly, go ahead.
We're not having an editing meeting now, are we? Please?
I am not chairing an editing meeting. My phone will accidentally disconnect if this starts to be an editing meeting.
Excellent.
Now, that doesn't mean someone can't say something's really missing, but we're not wordsmithing here.
Thank you. Just because if we are, then my phone will disappear about the same time yours does. Thank you.
I hope the people left have fun.
So do I.
All right. Background. Again, we have to presume that at least some of the people are on the board are brand new, are not particularly familiar with at large, and are certainly not familiar with how we work. Some of you may recall from an earlier ALAC board meeting when a board member suggested that in addition to meeting at three ICANN meetings a year, that perhaps we should consider teleconferences.
Right.
Now, we probably have more teleconferences than anyone else in ICANN. We certainly spend more on them with our translation. But nevertheless, things like facts don't necessarily get in the way of people's positions and how they understand things. So the background starts off by pointing out how many people travel and reiterating the fact that we have said multiple times before that for the vast majority of at-large people, and there's less than a handful that I can think of that don't meet this model, if ICANN doesn't provide the funding, people don't show up. There are a couple of people who have other aspects of their life which will allow them to come to ICANN meetings even if they weren't funded by at-large travel support, but it's limited to that. So that's a really important issue, because if you look at things like the registrars or registry stakeholder group, they have people coming to these meetings who are not funded. And the presumption is everyone is in that model. So the first paragraph is attempting to set that record straight. I'm sure it will not convince everybody. We go on to a little bit of the history of at large, in that, again, someone coming into ICANN now may assume that the whole concept of at large, which RALOs and ALSs, has existed since the start of time, and that is not the case. That there was a time when the ALAC was largely appointed by the board. There were no ALSs, there were no RALOs. So that's been built up over time. and it goes into a little bit of the history of how that happened. There's a parenthetical comment somewhere saying, once we had the Raylos, ICANN staff stopped working with these people. Because, again, in this world of GSE with hundreds of people on the ground around the country, people forget that just a few years ago there were none, with the exception of the people in the U.S. or a few people at offices in Brussels and at that point Sydney. So, again, history is not going to make the case, but it's important that people understand that there's been a huge evolution and we're trying to make it work. That brings us up to around about line 47 right now, for those of you who want to scroll, up to the first summit. Prior to the summit, there had been what were equivalent to general assemblies. I'm not sure they were used with that term, because in some cases, the representatives of prospective or new ALSs were brought together to help write the various formative documents, the principles of operation, rules of procedure. And in some cases that was all done remotely. In other cases, it was done with face-to-face meetings. And for each of the RALOs, there was an opportunity to sign the Memorandum of Understanding with ICANN, where all of the representatives of ALSs, or most of them, were brought to an ICANN meeting for a formal signing. That may or may not have been the time at which the RALO came into existence, but there was at least one where they were all brought together. There was a belief that should continue, but unclear how we would be funding it or how it would be handled. What we decided to do, and I want to turn it over to Cheryl for a minute to go back into how the summit came about, but a decision was taken to bring together representatives of all the ALSs at the time, of which there were about 100, and I think about 80 came to the meeting in Mexico City, and that became the first summit. I don't think the term Atlas was used at that point. At least I don't remember it being used.
No, was
but,
not.
But it did become after the fact became At Large Summit became Atlas. Cheryl, do you have can you give a couple of sentences about the rationale for how it came about and how we convinced people to fund it?
First of all, yes, it was called the Atlas from the beginning, At Large
really?
Summit.
I never heard of it.
Well, it was the shorthand used in our planning meetings. It was a consequence of how the quite extensive, and it was extensive, workup and planning was written, and it became rather amusing to a number of us that the concept of holding the world of ICANN on the shoulders of the ALSs was a viable image, and the whole usage of Atlas and the demigod activity associated with that name came into bearing from then. In preparation to that, it was also a whole lot of other fluffy bits like the colours that were selected by the RALOs, et cetera, and indeed the logo that we currently use today. Now, all of that is all very nice, but how we got it to happen was a lot of extremely tense and quite hotly contested and debated discussion with particularly the ICANN board, but also we had to convince key leadership and stakeholders in the other parts of the ICANN community, who I can assure you were far from enthusiastic at the considerable expenditure that bringing together a single representative from each of our ALSs, our at-large structures, as they had then been formed into the regional organisations. It was a not inconsistent considerable expenditure. It was an, at the time, somewhat unheard of expenditure, and it took an awful lot of convincing by the leadership of the ALAC for that to even be considered by the ICANN board. And it was very much a bilateral discussion to begin with, until proof of concept was agreed to, that we would look at having such a meeting. It was also a time when there was a great deal of morphogenesis or change in how ICANN was doing things, and a number of the constituencies and component parts of at least the GNSO, I think, somewhat belatedly, but eventually realised that having such a thing as an at-large summit for the at-large structures, which, remember, at that time, many parts of ICANN literally did not understand what it was all about and why anything beyond their own views within their own support organisation was at all useful or essential.
Oh, interesting. We've just lost her.
Finished. We'll have to assume they'll form her, but... all right. Let me give a little bit more background as to the world we were living in at that point, because I think it's important to understand it. We were coming out of a world where there was no difference between at-large and ALAC. Nowadays, we are continually hammering on, especially new leadership in ICANN, to understand the difference between ALAC and at-large. At that point, there wasn't any. The interim ALAC was 15 people, 10 of whom were appointed by the board, because there were no RALOs, and five of whom were appointed by the NOMCOM were at large, with a couple of ALSs coming on board which didn't really have any connection to anything. And they tended to be the ALSs that were created by the ALEC members at the time. If I had to use a single word to describe ALAC in the 2007 and 8 time frame, it's a very simple, it's a four-letter word. It's joke. It was pandering to the U.S. government who wanted users involved and allowing us to have words that said users are involved, but they really didn't do anything. That's not true. They did do things. They were viewed as not doing anything. So this is 2 years later now, and we had turned the world around enough to convince senior people in ICANN that there was something outside of the ALAC and that we needed to get them involved. Vanda, go ahead.
Yeah, just to remember one main point at the time, that was there was no budget. When I left the board and went to the ALAC, the first thing I need to do is to talk with the people from ICANN to have a budget for us, because it was no budgets. Nobody had submitted any budgets. So it was really just a group of people. There was no structure. So from 2007, they start to structure. You know, all the forms, all the things. I do believe that is important for the history, that the first budget was done with ICANN in 2008.
Thank you, Vanda. Clearly, ICANN evolved. When at-large was first created as the interim ALAC, the intent was to bring those people to one meeting and then never bring ALAC people to any meeting again. That sounds funny right now, but that really was the plan.
Yes.
And there was a lot of work done at that point, and we're talking about in the 2003 time frame, to convince ICANN to fund the 15 ALAC members to come to meetings. And, of course, in later years, we eventually, once the railroads existed, we added in regional leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a progression as we've gone forward.
Yes.
All right. So we did get the Mexican City Summit funded, and it was, by all accounts, a success. We realized, of course, that the effort involved and the money involved was not something that was going to happen very often. We did have hope there would be another summit sometime, and we eventually came up with this concept of a summit every 5 years, and in the four intervening years, or at least three out of the four years, we would have general assemblies in each of the regions. That meant the general assemblies, you know, if you consider the summit a general assembly for everyone, that means the general assemblies are not necessarily evenly spaced. Because if you look at the actual history, you'll find in some cases the General Assembly and the summit are, for any given region, are quite close to each other or quite far apart. But it seemed to be something which we could convince people that it should be funded, and it has been moderately successful. Any questions? So that's basically where we are right now. We have gone through one full cycle. We've had two summits 5 years apart. We did manage to have five regional assemblies in between those. One of them was not at an ICANN meeting, but it did meet the criteria for a general assembly. I think there's a general feeling right now that although there are some merits to having a meeting somewhere else, much of the justification in this paper is that the meeting should be at an ICANN meeting. So to the extent possible, I think that's where our focus is going to be going forward, and it certainly is in this paper. The next section we're talking about is trying to understand or convince people of the importance of face-to-face meetings, and I'm going to turn it over to Olivier.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking, and indeed, the whole paper is actually based on three main pillars. The first one is the one that face-to-face meetings are very, very important, and especially in our community, and Alan has given the lots of reasons for that, including the one that, of course, pretty much none of the people in our community have any alternative way to be funded to go to face meetings, or none of the people in our community have a direct relationship with the domain name business as such. So if you don't bring people face to face, you're just going to have people walk away after a short while. The second pillar is the need for multi-year funding. And the third pillar is the need for the recognition that there is a certain pattern that takes place that has gone on between the first summit and the second summit, and that we're now seeing as well with the third summit. And so we really are pushing towards having this pattern continue. Now, let's go back then to the importance of the face-to-face meetings. I think that in there we tried to really look at the various reasons, first mentioning the volunteer body, but also really pushing for the fact that we are a very diverse geographical entity as such, and that introduces all sorts of problems for our community. The first one being that, of course, we have language and cultural issues, but the bigger one being that the earth is round, and so if we conduct all of our business in conference calls, we're going to end up with calls that will clash with either the middle of the working day for some people or the middle of the night for others, and that is not ideal. You need to have one location that you can meet face-to-face and have everyone awake at the same time and hopefully getting some sleep at the same time as well. So that was one very important part in there. There is also the whole point of the skills gap. The fact that you do learn a lot faster when you actually attend an ICANN meeting than if you just learn about it in books or if you're following it remotely. It's one of these things that you have to experience, and certainly to be able to sustain the knowledge and the skills that we have in our community, we need regular face-to-face meetings that bring those people, new, fresh blood, if you want, into the equation that will be able to take on the positions of those people that are then moving on or that have other things to do. And that also recognizes the fact that there is a lot more going on in our world than there used to be a while ago. I think that certainly the at-large community has commented on a lot more processes than it has in the past. It's involved in a lot more threads, including now also being involved with some individuals in the GNSO working groups, PDP working groups. So there is a need to replenish that supply and have more people join us. There's also mention of the opportunity for networking. What do at-large members take out of this whole at-large community? Are they just interested in saving the world, or is there also some other side to it? And I think that certainly the opportunity for networking is something that's been very helpful for many of our members, being able to share views and share address books, I guess, with other people that are from around the world and maybe in the same field of work that they are in outside of ICANN as well. And so that's an important incentive for volunteers. And finally, the final bullet in this, why face-to-face meetings are important, it's down to the exposure of the workings of ICANN. It's the whole combination of the workings of ICANN on one side, which do allow you to meet a large number of people around the world, but at the same time also this mix between geography, new people that have been around for a while, that stuff is really important. And I don't know if we've missed any other points in there, and I would certainly at this stage I'd be very happy to have any further suggestions as to what other advantages we could put in there for face-to-face meetings. Holly Reich?
Just a thought. As an aside, when we say this is the only, we probably as a group have enough diverse interests that we would not necessarily as a group meet in the way that, say, registries probably all know each other. They probably all deal with each other and with registrars. There's not the same kind of reason that a lot of us would otherwise get together. I don't know if that's worth adding as another point, but I was just looking at the first point. It's a volunteer body, and with volunteers who don't necessarily share the same interest in domain names, who may come at it from very different perspectives and not otherwise have the same reason for knowing each other that the industry does. I'm not sure that works, but there you go.
Yeah, thanks, Holly. It's Olivia speaking. Well, the first two bullet points are saying this. What you're saying, so the first bullet point is saying 100% volunteer body. The second one is saying no commercial interest in domain names. When you mentioned the opportunity for networking that contracted parties might have, it's a tricky issue. I have discussed this with registries and registrars because we have to remember they are competitors as well. Some of them are fierce competitors and hate each other's guts. I've found out quite shockingly so, actually, thinking they're all, a cabal of domain people. But no. There's some strong points there that go way beyond ICANN meetings. So although we have to recognize that, yes, there is actually an ICANN-run domains type forum that takes place where ICANN meets with contracted parties without us riffraff being around, and that's a fact. It's there, not the riffraff, but the fact that the industry meets without everyone else. That already is in place, and although there are some domain forums that take place around the world which they can use to network in, I'm not sure that we should specifically mention the contracted parties in this respect. But I see that Alan has got his hand up. Maybe he has a different view. Alan Greenberg?
Actually, my view has evolved as you were talking. I put my hand up to point out that the first two bullets are separate bullets, but as was mentioned earlier in the document, we are volunteers to a large extent different from many other volunteers in ICANN. And, you know, volunteers come in certainly various flavors and colors and how passionate they are. There are certainly volunteers, you know, and the best example I'll give is Chuck Gomes. You know, he works for VeriSign. He is paid to be here. He puts far more hours and passion and care into what he does here than anyone could ever require of an employee. So, you know, it's not a simple fact that, you know, yes, registries or other people are paid to be here. The same can be said for people in a lot of other parts of ICANN.
Yes.
Yes, technically they are working in the industry, but they also care a lot. But they do have some level of funding.
Yes.
And that makes a significant difference. The other thing that that we didn't bring up, and I'm not sure we should, and I guess I look for input, is, as Olivier mentioned, ICANN does hold meetings for registrars and registries to meet periodically. The non-contracted party house of the GNSO several times has met in plenary sessions between ICANN meetings. So the kind of thing we're talking about is not unique to us. And I think we probably need to bring that out somewhere. Thank you.
Thanks for this, Alan. It's Olivia speaking. Perhaps you can think of where to put this. Let's not have a decision right there. And
yeah,
now,
no,
if
no.
If anybody thinks where that could be put, that certainly is something we need to mention somewhere. Okay. Any other comments? Cheryl Engenor, you have the floor.
That what Alan said is something I was going to bring up a little later, and it's basically putting it into the chat. It is a consequence of even the first Atlas Summit in Mexico, but certainly of the consequent General Assemblies and the second summit, that the expectation and validation of these plenary meeting exercises has in fact, I think, been easier for other parts of ICANN to then get funded and supported. I think we could actually state the hypothesis that it is because of the clear and resounding success of engaging our diverse, one could say most diverse community of volunteers in the role of acting in the best interests of internet end users through our at-large movement and the associated General Assemblies and Summits, that has been the proof of concept for such activity to now be supported in other parts, component parts of ICANN. I doubt that, other than perhaps small sponsoring by interested parties of things like networking events for parts of the particular constituencies just within the two support organisations that are interested in the G and the C space, would ever occur other than based on what I think is a good model that our assemblies have developed. Thanks.
Thanks for this,
Cheryl.
Take a note. Oh, there's an echo again. Testing, 1, 2, 3.
You're okay.
Scott. Okay. Excellent. Right, so we've got a few more things to add on there. Any other points for this section? And I think staff has captured some of the points, and we'll listen to the I think, well, can we certainly listen to the recording afterwards to add a couple more points in there, but I don't see anyone with any more points for this section. So the next session after that, the section 4, looks at the need for the multi-year planning. And that's something that we have been asking for a very long time. We've asked for multi-year budgets. And the ICANN finance department has pushed back on multi-year budgets for many, many years because that's just not the way that they work. They work on a budget that works year on year and is separate. That said, of course, I think there was somehow this misunderstanding perhaps where we were basically meaning a multi-year planning when the finance department was hearing multi-year budgets. And indeed, Alan has been many times, has said many times that when one looks at any significant investment in anything to do with ICANN, there are often multi-year planning that needs to take place for these. Is that correct, Alan Greenberg?
It goes farther than that. Xavier has often says that the difference between planning and budgeting is budgeting actually commits the expense, whereas planning is just blue sky planning. And to be honest, that is very disingenuous, which is the kind way of saying it's not true. ICANN makes long-term commitments past the fiscal year often. Now, we are not in a position to forecast well our income 5 years in advance, and we don't make commitments for our whole budget 5 years in advance, but I sure hope we're renting building premises for more than a year at a time, and I hope we're committing to the building for July prior to June 30th, because it would just be ludicrous in any real world to say we're not doing any commitment of resources in years ahead of time. We have now scheduled ICANN meetings 3 years out, something we used to do and haven't done for a while, but we are now. That's making financial commitments. There are penalties associated with backing out or with changing things. We accepted several $100 million from new GTLD applicants with a commitment to spend the money on the program. So we spend money, we commit money ahead of time, multi-years, all the time. It's not our full budget. But let's not pretend that we don't do any commitments. We're just asking to be put in that category, too. Thank you.
Thanks for this, Alan. It's Olivier speaking. And as Cheryl mentions in the chat, this is planning and commitment to expenditure. Tijani Benjamin.
Thank you very much, Olivier. I'm sorry. Yes, I was muted. Sorry. Tijani speaking. As Olivier said, it is multi-year planning and not multi-year budget. And I understand very well what Alan said. They are always working like this. Means that they plan for multi-year things, but their immediate commitment is for the budget. Of course, if the next year, if there is something that will prevent them to budget what was planned previously, they will not budget it. That's the meaning of we don't commit. They don't commit 100% if you want, but it is a commitment when they plan. So I think that we can go with multi-year planning. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tijani. It's Olivier speaking. And so I'll go through the bullet points swiftly. This section is really into two parts. The first part of this section is looking at the problems that are arising due to the fact that we don't have multi-year planning. And it goes quite deeply into them. And then the second part goes into the positives, if you want, if we went for multi-year planning, what would that result in? So effectively, it kind of shows you what the problems are, what the problems what problems are caused, and then find a solution to end up on a happy, positive note. The various problems that have been identified are particularly, well, the first one is the predictability of it all. For the ALAC, for the railroads, for ICANN staff, for everyone, there is a lack of predictability in our own planning for our own strategy and how we work, which is very difficult when we have no idea whether there's going to be a face-to-face meeting in the next year or not. And that, of course, includes the problem of the organizing the first ICANN meeting of the fiscal year. If one was to have a face-to-face meeting in October and one just has 2 or 3 months to prepare for that, it's very, very short indeed. So that's the first thing that was mentioned. The predictability for the ICANN finance and ICANN board was seemed to be important as well. If we suddenly drop a request for $700,000, that certainly is going to give make a budget, an ICANN budget, quite different from the usual budget that doesn't have such a request. And so being able to plan for this in advance can only be a good thing. Thirdly, the point is made to do with the five-year cycle, the fact that we are constantly working on this, using this cycle, but the problem is we keep on having new board members, new staff, new volunteers, and sometimes we think that we're continually faced with explaining the entire pattern, its history, benefits, requirements, over and over again. It feels like a repeat. The fourth point in there is to do with the limited budget planning cycle and the uncertainty of success until the very last moment. A summit takes a long time to put together. We took nearly a year last time, and I think previously the first summit also took 6 to 8 months to prepare, if not more. We can't just ask for a summit and have it 3 months later. So that was one additional point. And then finally on this page, it's the amount of time that is needed by volunteers and by staff to create each time a request for these summits and for these general assemblies. We're just not working smartly here. We're doing something that is repetitive and that somehow is just not bound to work too well in this fashion. So these are the negatives, the positives, and I'll come to you in a second, Alan. Okay, so these are all the negatives. The positives, you know, why would a multi-year planning be better? Well, obviously, you take any of the points that we've made before and you say the counterpoint. So certainly more financial predictability for ICANN at all levels, both at the RADO level, at the ALAC level, but also at the ICANN finance level. They know that something, a summit would be coming up in 2 years' time. You can prepare for it. You can certainly prepare financially. You can actually have a bigger picture view of what are the major plans in a specific year, way ahead of these plans being filed by the different parts of ICANN. So that really is something that we see as being very helpful. Certainly the ability of everyone concerned to be able to plan in time, including planning for a summit, which, as we said, takes a year, is important when you know that this is going to be on the table a year from now. Preparing the community for these general assemblies or summit is very important. And the worst thing is to tell them, yes, we're going to have a general assembly at such and such a meeting if we get the funding, and then we don't get the funding, and then they don't get the general assembly. And it certainly doesn't instill much confidence in many of our community. And then finally, looking at the overall efficiency, the volunteer morale and cooperation, this whole thing of having something that is multi-year and that is planned in advance with a view to the future is something that certainly would bring confidence to our community in knowing that there is the next meeting is coming up in such a date, et cetera. Alan, I'm probably rambling, but you have the floor now.
Yeah, thank you. Two comments, one related to the section, one not, but I want to capture it before we go on. Related to the section, that last bullet on volunteer and staff time I think is really weak. I'm not sure if we want to delete it or strengthen it. Although, yes, if we had commitment ahead of time, it would make life a little bit easier, but we're still going to have to do planning. We're still going to have to do specific requests for fund in any given year. So it's not clear that the work is really a lot more, certainly a lot easier on our attention, but I'm not convinced that the actual workload is that different, so we may want to rethink that. On a general sense, I realize what is missing, and I made the somewhat interesting comment earlier that a director once suggested we hold teleconferences. I think we probably want to document in this paper that we do a very significant amount of intersessional work between ICANN meetings. Again, someone who's not familiar with what we're doing may not realize the scope of the work. And as an example, we talk about the CCWG or the CWG, and there were 70 or 60 or 70 meetings that were held. And that's a very impressive number. Among our five RALOs, we have almost that many monthly meetings a year. And that's not considering any of our working groups or any of our seminars or webinars or things like that. So I'm going to suggest to staff that we try to put together some statistics very quickly, perhaps for calendar year 15, which is an easy one that's relatively recent, and just try to capture the number of meetings and to the extent that we can even estimate the total number of people that are attending these meetings. I think it's going to be a very impressive number and point out that we're not simply saying give us travel money because that's the only way we can get anything done. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alan. It's Olivia speaking. And I think that would work for Section 3. Is that correct?
Probably. It's either Section 3 or a preamble to Section 3, which justifies Section 3. I'm not quite sure where it fits, but we'll find a good place to put it.
Okay, thanks. And just turning over to staff, I don't see that being an action item. But Ariel, you've got this?
It will be an action item, regardless of whether they write it or not.
This is Ariel. I just captured it in the pod.
I'll work with Alan. I'll work with staff and try to make sure it's a task which is not impossible and doesn't generate too much load, but gets some useful data quickly. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Cheryl Langdon-Orr, you have the floor.
Thank you, Olivier. Cheryl, for the record, just following on from Alan's points, and he started to make a point I was keen to make later as well. But before I go to the details of supporting and also giving some where you might find some of these statistics to make that action item easier to implement, I think another thing we could put in somewhere in Section 3 and indeed probably allude to it in the executive summary is the fact that over the last 10 years, and we can sort of talk in that time frame because it's about, you know, that long since summits have been on the agenda and et cetera. Across a number of industry and interest sectors globally, the role of, in their vernacular, the customer, but in our vernacular, the customer and internet end user, so we've got the registrants and indeed the greater, wider internet significantly interested parties, and you can use that term, I think, advisedly, has changed. We have, for heaven's sake, even the banking and insurance industries now having a customer focus, which is vastly different to what it was only 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. And so the value and importance of having these gatherings and opportunities and all of the positives that you've outlined fits in to that, I think, and probably makes ICANN arguably a leader, and they'll feel good about that, in terms of in inverted commas, industry best practice of engagement with their consumer and end user groups. Make better words out of it, but that's something I thought that was probably worthwhile bringing to the fore. In terms of the helping with that, those action items, I think it is important that we show how much intercessional work happens, because it is something that not everyone will necessarily be aware of. But one of the places you may find some of that, and I'd also mention how much work happens at a ICANN meetings in general, is at our reports. Our reports are often completed, presented, and not really read or gone into the details of by beyond those of us who are fascinated by these metrics or who are presenting it. But right back to chairman of the large advisory committee in 2003 and beyond, we've reported to the wider community on the activities of the ALAC and at large, and there has been a clear and demonstrable growth. Things like the number of actual public policy and policy development input pieces that have come out of, there's been an exponential growth in the number of capital S statements that happen intersessionally for the general work in ICANN. It's gone from looking very much at self-structure and self-organisational activities to being an integral and essential part of the cross-community work at ICANN. And we should also remember to, you know, as Alan said, put some of the human hours that are involved in the regional and the, of course, even some of the at-large structure activities which benefit ICANN as well. I also would suggest that we do remember that as we go into a internationalised and globally accountable entity, to be able to demonstrate that ICANN is committed to the individuals that are affected by the outcomes of its policy development work and discussion, by fostering and encouraging our at-large structures and indeed individual members who are interested to continue to contribute and to learn, is vital. So we can probably close the circle to some extent in summary there as well. Thanks.
Thanks for that, Cheryl. That's a lot of information here, but we'll hopefully captured most of it. And I'm sure we'll have to resort to the recording again a little bit on this. Next is Holly Reich.
Just a thought, if we are using as a metric the number of hours that Alan suggested based on just on AP RALO meetings, other RALO meetings, ALAC executive, there is an unquantifiable amount of additional time if you think that the hours that all of us have put in non-ALAC for the GNSO stuff, for the ICANN stuff. I'm not suggesting you try to quantify it, but just put in the untold hours that everybody else has put in apart from ALAC. Thank you.
Thanks for this. I'm not sure how we can quantify that. It's Olivier speaking. I'm not sure how we can quantify that exactly. But
Olivier, I don't think I think it's too difficult. But I think some of the hours that were massively put in for the whole IAN thing, there is some quantity there, and then just say, and there's an almost unquantifiable amount of time that are put on the various GNSI working groups. And leave it there, because I don't know a simple way of doing this, frankly.
Okay, thanks for this, Holly. So Olivia speaking. I mean, do you think that we need to have this? Because I'm starting to be a bit concerned. We're adding a lot more things, And does that actually strengthen our message, or does this somehow dilute our message?
It follows on from the point, this is Holly speaking, it follows on from the point Alan was making, which is ICANN may not be aware of the amount of time and effort that all of us put in, not just to ALAC, but to ICANN generally. In the scheme of things, if you don't think it matters, well, fine, but if we are using that as a strong point, then let's just indicate that the hours that people put in are more than just ALAC stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, I guess make up your mind whether that's strength or not.
Yeah, thanks for this, Holly. It's Olivia speaking. I think that actually makes sense in that we as in the ALAC and at large, have been accused in the past of coming to ICANN meetings, meeting in their own room, but never mixing or mingling with any of the rest of the community, and that clearly is not the case, if at all. Our community mixes and mingles more and is involved with more processes than anybody else out there because we are cross-cutting, and we do take part in GNSO working groups. So that's a good point that you're making on this. Let's go down the queue. Let's have Vanda Scartazzini next.
Okay. In the same sense, I would like to add the directed advantage for all AC, for the other AC, for the GAC, and all SOs members to know ALS members from their areas. I could see here after London how Lac Rallo helped many registrars, many CCs, and even ICANN to talking around and spread word about what is going on, even helping governments to understand and encourage them to participate. So that is, in my opinion, quite important, because those people from the ALS, they are in the root grass, and they talk with everybody. They are a non-profit organization. They dedicate time for other people. So there is a lot of things they are helping now, the whole ICANN community, not only us, just adding more information about what Holly has said.
Thanks for this, Vanda.
This is direct, and many people inside the board I have opportunity to talk with. I said, wow, this is not for us. A lot of people in Latin America are working for the new GTLDs information, convincing people that maybe they need to buy someone. So they have direct impression on the areas for other ACs and SOs.
Thanks for this, Vanda. It's Olivia speaking. I see support from Sernush Vandanyan and support also from Cheryl Langdonor to what you've just said. I think that would fit well in section number 3, why the face-to-face meeting is important. And you have really hit the nail on the head here. That's also a question that one is often asked, is that, why... What's the worth of having at-large around and having your ALS representatives around? And that answers the question.
Yes.
If you certainly have seen a synergy going on because of the fact that they came to London, that's a definite win.
Yes.
And it's a win not only for at-large, it's obviously a win for these other organizations and for the other parts of ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good point.
Yes.
Okay, next is Alan Greenberg. Alan, you might be muted. Having a wonderful conversation with yourself.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Very well now. Now you're yep.
I didn't change anything. I just pushed the same button that was pushed previously. I suspect what Vanda raises is a good point, and we do have to include it. I suspect there are a moderate number of GAC members and CCTLD members who were who first found out about it or were prompted to it based on either at-large people or fellowship people who have become acquainted with ICANN. I'm not sure we can collect those kind of statistics, but we may want to allude to them in some vague way. In terms of Holly's comment on we don't want to spend too much time on this, how many hours we put in. I think there's some staff time that's going to be needed. The actual part of the paper is going to be a sentence or so. So I don't think we're going to be cluttering up the paper with this. I'll point out that in Steve Crocker's New York Times, I think it was New York Times, op-ed piece the other day, basically saying the U.S. better do the transition, he quoted numbers of hours of conference calls and emails and things like that. Those are good numbers to impress people that things are serious. So thank you.
Thanks for this, Alan. It's Olivia speaking, and we still have... Vanda's hand is still up?
No, sorry. I'm out of the computer.
I'll put on my chair hand and notice we have less than 20 minutes and we still have some paper to go through.
Well, thanks, Alan. It's Olivia speaking. And I think that we've gone through the two sections, 3 and 4, the need for multi-year planning. I don't see any other hands up for additions to this. So we can move on to the proposal, and it's over to you, Alan.
Okay, thank you. The proposal is relatively short because we're not trying to belabor the point. If they accept it in concept, we'll then have to figure out how to actually do it. But there's no point in planning really large details. We are summarizing here the way we envision the concept of a 5-year plan of starting after a summit and continuing, that typically we can imagine a year with no general assemblies. This gives us some time to recover. It gives us some time to start implementing things that came out of the general assembly. And then we're looking out at the next 3 years, years 2, 3, and 4. We have the 5 assemblies. So clearly we're looking at probably, 2, 2, and 1 or something like that, trying to avoid having a general assembly too close into the summit. And then the summit. It's a relatively modest plan. If you look at the next page, which is the timeline, well, not the next page. Let's skip ahead to the diagram. Which doesn't come out in this. No way we can shrink it. The details aren't okay. It doesn't really matter. This timeline goes basically into this fiscal year. It does demonstrate that we, at this point, there was one General Assembly, the one in Dublin, at the beginning of this year, and hopefully there will be 4 more over the next couple of years to allow us to finish the full cycle of 5. The format attempts to show the pattern, and you'll note, for instance, if you look at the General Assemblies for Asia-Pacific, we have between Mexico City and the next one is a 4-year gap and then a 1-year gap. They're not all evenly split. Some of them, like Latin America, Caribbean, it's almost in the middle. But clearly, since we're subject to the rotation of ICANN meetings and availability of funding, that we really don't have a lot of options. But it does mean people get together with some level of regularity. It's not a perfect system, but it's something that's manageable. We could gain the same thing, for instance, by having a General Assembly every 2 to 3 years. The cost would be higher, the amount of work would be higher, and I don't think we could sustain it. So this is a good compromise for going forward. The diagram, by the way, thanks to Devanand Tilaksingh, who did the first version of that and convinced me I had to learn how to use Google Docs to do diagrams to finish the rest of it. But I think it illustrates the pattern without too much clutter. And but if anyone has any tweaking suggestions, we might consider them. So the conclusions and next steps, which is the page before this, I think, or maybe the page after, I'm not sure which, is basically summarizing. We have been carrying out this plan for the last 7 years now, so as we're talking about since 2009, 2008, including the planning of it, and it's sort of worked, but we're the equivalent of hand-to-mouth eating, that everything is done on a short term, and that's not good for ICANN budgeting. It's not in line with how ICANN does its overall planning right now, because they are doing five-year planning and try to not have surprises like summits coming up in other parts of their existence. And we're simply suggesting that we roll this into the standard ICANN multi-year operational planning. And it already fits within the strategic planning, I believe. And that we simply go forward and make this business as usual. So at that point, I have not a lot else. We've gotten a lot of really good suggestions. I was a little bit dubious this meeting was going to be useful. But it has, I think, from my point of view, has been exceedingly useful in that we've identified a number of things that that are important issues that were left out of this paper. And I think we have a handle on it now that we should be able to get a new version out by early next week, and then the final version out by the end of the week in time to submit it to the budget plan. And I see two hands, Olivier and Cheryl. I don't know what order they came in, so we'll take Olivier first.
Thanks, Alan. Let's have Cheryl first, please.
Okay.
Cheryl, for the record, and I shall jump in. I've been multitasking, because I do, and I've just finished reviewing another entire document while I've been working with you on this one. And there's something that, there's a quote that I thought we might use in another aspect of ICANN activities in terms of behaviours at meetings. But there's a part of this catch line that I wanted to share with you, Olivier, because I think it might be something we can use perhaps as a lead-in sentence, but just something I want to use later on in our work on meeting behaviour expectations is the following quote from actually the banking industry. And it says, to keep working hard to make sure we have the right culture, the right practices and the right behaviours in place. Well, having general assemblies with our at-large structures is a foundation to that in a grassroots, bottom-up consensus development model. Thank you.
Are you there, Olivier?
I certainly am here. I was waiting for our venerable chair to...
You turned it over to Cheryl, so I thought you were going to take it back.
okay, fine. Thanks. It's Olivier speaking. Cheryl, that's a great quote. If you can email it over to Alan and I, that would be great. We can add it in there. I like the banking industry has always come up with some fantastic themes, and they've certainly got the money to pay for some good marketing people. And so I like the cultural part and so on was sounded really cool. To keep working hard to make sure we have the right culture. That's priceless. I'm not kidding. It's a good one. And so we should add this on there. What I was going to say was to add one more thing, which is that this document is not only geared at the board, but this document, I believe, is going to be the document that will also be shared in case of any public comment. And I think that one of the things that, as we're seeing now, the community veto of the budget becoming a reality in next rounds, I'm sensitive to the fact that this document is going to be shared with all of the SOs and ACs. And I would say that the biggest hurdle to us moving forward with this document and the board moving forward with it will be the response that we get from other supporting organizations and advisory committees. We need to think of a plan to first present it to them. We also need, when we read this, to not only think in terms of how a board member would react, but also how a community member from outside the ALAC and at-large community would respond. And so I invite you to have a final look at this before we finalize this paper, so that we're sure that we're not working counterproductively, if you want, when it comes down to working with the other supporting organizations and advisory committees and stakeholder groups. That's all I needed to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments before we leave? Adjourn a few minutes early. As I said, I think it's been a very productive and useful meeting. So I thank those who have taken the trouble to attend and to contribute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No further comments. Cheryl, I need you for 5 minutes. Can I convince you to stay up for another few minutes?
And Alan, I've actually put that quote into the chat. I hope it got through to the chat so it's all in one space with other comments that have come in, because my AC crashed just as I pressed send. Let me know if it didn't come through.
I do not see it, actually.
Of course not. Great.
Well, Alan, you didn't need to tell her that. You should have said, yes, we've got it. Don't worry.
Well, I wasn't planning on resending it.
It was about an hour and 10 minutes into the time. We'll get it from the transcript.
Thank
or
you.
From the recording.
You want me to stay on the line or you want to call me back? Huh?
I'll call Skype or telephone. You just tell me which.
Bye.
Cheryl, Skype or telephone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, bye. Thank you.
The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much for your participation. The audio will now be disconnected. Have a lovely day.